Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, before he got on this podcast, said, are you ready to talk about bad linebackers, day four?
Really,
so I want you guys to know that he was a coward about his negativity tonight because he was upfront about it earlier. I called him out on it, and now he's being a coward about it.
Hey, listen. It's known that everybody who's been following the series knows that Thursday is typically not a strong day for players. So I feel vindicated in this one.
I really like one of these guys.
Oh, man. We got to stop. I got to stop coming out with this because then you hit me with the number of people that you like, and then it's the guessing game. I want to come off with it right off the bat because I think I know who it is.
Okay, let's do it.
Kenneth Murray.
Absolutely not.
No?
Kenneth Murray was my least favorite linebacker I watched tonight.
Wow. Tell me about that.
I mean, one, thought it was hilarious because he had 28 tackles against Army. And I was like, oh my God, this guy had 28 tackles in one game, which was the most in FBS since the year 2000. And it's the second most in school history in a single game. I have no idea who is more than 28, but that's unbelievable. I watched two separate games that were cut-ups of Kenneth Murray, and then when I also watched the other Oklahoma guy, Caleb Kelly, I caught a different glimpse of him.
Caleb Kelly is definitely not the player you like a lot, because you would not have called him the other Oklahoma guy if you liked him.
Okay, yes, keep it going. This is correct. You're getting good at this elimination. I just really did not think that Murray really was a difference maker. I thought that he, when it came to taking on blocks and dealing with clutter, I thought he was off balance. I thought he was rarely strong on contact. I watched that West Virginia game, and my God, the amount of times that I saw him get juked in open space, if I had to watch that again, I was going to puke. Just straight one-on-one tackles, even in between tackles, I just saw him miss. Didn't really think he got to the sideline that fast. He looks like a guy who's like kind of going fast, but then he's really not getting point A to point B the way that I wanted him to. Didn't really drop back a ton in coverage. That was a lot more of Caleb Kelly's role for Oklahoma, and so there wasn't as much of that. And so really what I saw from Murray is him being more of a traditional downhill linebacker, and I just thought he wasn't very good at downhill linebacker stuff. I thought he was super average, and I saw him get washed out a bunch. When he took on offensive linemen, I saw him get knocked back, didn't really hold points of attack. I was not a fan of his. Did you like him?
Right. So I'll put it to you this way. I think of the four players we talked about, the one who's best at the best thing he's good at, like the one who is at like the best at his best thing, is Kenneth Murray in terms of stopping power and playing between the tackles.
Oh no! Oh my goodness!
Kenneth Murray.
Did we watch different? Did I watch the wrong person?
Murray's nine. He's the absolutely gigantic one.
Yeah, I know. Okay, we're watching the right person.
Dude, so he's listed 6'2", 243. I might buy that, to be honest. He is yoked, firstly. He's huge. Secondly, he absolutely has tremendous, in my opinion, stopping power. When it's in the hole back versus Murray, Murray is winning in terms of yardage gained regularly. Like, he's knocking people back on their butts.
What games did you watch?
I watched his game against Army. I watched his game against Texas, the conference championship.
Okay, the game against Army doesn't count.
I disagree.
The game against Army does not count, dude. They're running the triple option and they run at him every single time, like just straight at him.
Okay, well, I don't like, okay, obviously, like, yes, the dive play is going to be going straight up the middle for Murray, and it does simplify the read. But Army was a highly effective running team all year, and Murray was the most productive player against them all season. That's not a mistake, in my opinion.
Man, this might be the biggest that we've like disagreed on a prospect maybe ever.
And the thing is, like, I'll come,
which is good. Right, this is the sign, Ben. This is a sign of a healthy podcast relationship. You know, it's we're no longer in the honeymoon phase. We're not agreeing with everything. Everything's not great.
Trevor, we left the honeymoon phase when you said that hippos weren't cuddly. But this, we're not going to bring that up right
this
now.
Is, okay, all right. So this is it. This is our first fight. Well, it's actually last week.
And listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Kenneth Murray, all 243 pounds, man, is like a good coverage linebacker right now, especially in the Big 12, where, I mean, you've got meshes and you've got crossers and you've got running back check releases and flares, and like that's just outside of his scope. Like I don't think he's ever going to be a quick enough, explosive enough dude to be handling that. But in terms of tackle-to-tackle influence, which is what we've talked about for the past 3 days, is increasingly devalued. Murray is a good product right now, in my opinion. Now, as a sophomore, as a young player, he's got 1 year worth of he's got like a year and a half worth of starting. Yes, he has 2 full years of starting. Excuse me, I'm conflating him with somebody else. 2 full years of starting. He still makes dumb mistakes. He still will sit two back on his heels, and he'll let offensive linemen come to him because he's peeking in the backfield. He's not really moving as he's processing. I talked a little bit about ingraining intuition, like with Dylan Moses. This is something that I think you'll see with Kenneth Murray as well. The more and more you play, the easier it is to process while you're moving on the fly. So I think that that's going to be an area in which Murray improves significantly, is moving while he's processing, because you can sometimes see him sit there, think, figure out what's going on, and by then, you know, obviously I'm going to angle on you, and now you've got to go fight through that. But when he's hot into contact, I mean, the dude's an absolute batting ram. He's got cement for hands. Man, I think he's really, really light.
When he has momentum on his side, when he knows when he's really going downhill about it, I guess I can get that. I see what you like. I just don't see that really as that much of an asset. Like, if you're a linebacker, that you should be able to do that. You should be able to use momentum on your side when you're going up gaps or between the tackles and stonewall people and do the dirty work and get into offensive linemen and not make a move. And so, like, if that's what you're hanging your hat on, I mean, that's not that valuable to me. I don't really...
No, I hear you. And that goes back to what I said. Like, of the four linebackers we're going to talk about today, if you took the best trait, the best skill of each one of them, I think Kenneth Murray's run defense is better than, like, you know, than like Caleb Kelly's man coverage. Then it's better than like Tuff Borland's block deconstruction. I think Tuff Borland is the guy that you like.
Do you want to talk about Tuff Borland, or do you want to talk about Caleb Kelly? Well, just get the Oklahoma guys out.
Yeah, talk about Caleb Kelly.
Okay. Caleb Kelly, much more of another linebacker from Oklahoma. He is much more of the coverage linebacker. He played, you know, when they would go nickel, sometimes he would play next to Murray at a linebacker spot. Other times they wanted to get creative, put a little bit more speed on the field. Sometimes they would put him just get a different linebacker in there. They would keep Caleb Kelly in the game and they play him in the slot. They play him a little bit depending on what the matchup was. They play him right in the middle there in almost a pure coverage role. And so I saw a little bit more, I guess I'll say, urgency from Kelly. He just seemed more of an urgent player, was more on his toes, could react a little bit faster than I thought Murray did. Better in coverage, obviously, but not really impressed with his power. Again, it was kind of the same thing. I didn't really love either of the Oklahoma guys' power. More of an asset, I think, with his coverage ability than Kenneth Murray was, but I wasn't really big on either of these guys, and it was funny because they played the position very differently, but I wasn't really big on either of the Oklahoma guys.
No, and I'm not huge on Caleb Kelly, and Kelly is 230. He is...
Yeah, 6'3", 230.
Yeah, he is not fleet of foot, right? And so I think he's got some...
He wants to be moving fast.
Right.
Like, he wants to.
Yeah, so did Tuff Borland. Tuff Borland ain't moving. And Kelly's quicker than Borland is. But you see, right, like high activity, low productivity in terms of like...
Yes, there you go.
He's willing to get on his horse, but the horse ain't going too fast. And that's just like, you know, I think the linear explosiveness is okay. It's when he's asked to play through angles, when he's asked to corner, when he's asked to flip his hips and run a curve. It's just he's not particularly nimble. And it's funny because he, to me... off of just like, you know, him in pads, he looks like top heavy. Like he looks like 230, and 200 of it is above the waist. Like he's like thin ankles, thin, you know, thin thighs. And so he struggles to, I think, drop his hips and to really like take sharp angles like that, because he's got so much mass up top that like it seems like he's just like banking really hard when he's asked to take these turns. And then they get him up into the line. You're 230. If you're going to survive against slots and you're up in the line, you got to hit somebody. And he doesn't really like to get physical in coverage when he's up at the line of scrimmage, which I mean, like, that's
good. I don't know. The Texas game, I think the first two clips, he, like, plays pure press coverage and just, like, mauls him at the snap, and I just, laughed like, really hard at
right
that.
Into the floor. Yeah, yeah. Which, like, you know, I've talked about this with, like, Isaiah Simmons and with Charles Snowden. Right. These guys do not have technique, you know what I mean?
Yes. They don't really know. Yeah, very much the case here. Yeah.
What I will say about Caleb Kelly, and this is a likable trait in linebackers, in safeties in that overhang spot, Caleb Kelly loves to be the second hit. When I say the second hit, first guy comes, wraps up, creates contact, displaces the guy. Kelly comes ball hunting. He will rush to a tackle point when other defenders are not coming at full speed, because Kelly knows that if he gets the right angle and if he comes in and then, you know, the running back's not focused on him and he's focused on somebody else, Kelly will come in and try to put a hat on the ball. And he's been successful doing so before. He's forced fumbles. I think he's got like four over the past couple of years. He's a high effort rally to the ball tackler, mm-hmm. who comes with intentions of forcing fumbles. And I like that a lot. I think that's very, like, that's translatable. That's admirable. It speaks to a team defense mindset, which is good. Physically, like, I don't know. I think that it would make a lot more sense for Kelly in the NFL to add a bit of mass and try to stick more as a traditional will, because he wasn't bad between the tackles. He just wasn't there frequently. And so I think that's going to be his better recourse instead of trying to lighten up and go safety, because I just don't really think he has the movement skills for that.
You know, stats aren't everything, but he's got 24 starts, 37 games played. And in those 24 starts, he's got way, and if you watch him play, he plays a lot of coverage. He's got one interception and three passes broken up in like 24 starts. And so, like, you're a linebacker, so you're getting picked on a little bit in coverage. And so, I don't know. Stats are not everything, but for as much coverage as he plays, and for that being kind of what his bread and butter seems to be, that's the position that he's moving into. Like you said, that like hybrid little tweener role where you're a linebacker slash a lighter one that's playing a little bit more in coverage. I'd like to see a little bit more coverage production from you.
He's not agile, and he's not doesn't see things develop quick in front of him. Which if we want to bump the transition here, I've been ragging on him a little bit, but man, Tough Borland, Ohio mm-hmm. State sees things quick. Mm-hmm. He's got a good head on his shoulders.
Yeah, yeah, he
like Borland too.
He's not the guy I like.
You like Nate Landman,
brother? Okay. We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get there, because I doth protest. But anyway,
I'm sorry, you what?
I doth protest. Isn't, the lady doth protest too much?
I don't. What is go? You need to elaborate here. I'm not even going to let us go on with the podcast. You got to let me know how you just insulted me.
Okay, so, in Hamlet, William Shakespeare, there's a famous line that
I'm very aware
said by. Queen Gertrude, I think, where she says, "The lady doth protest too much, methinks," which is about somebody's like, you know, like revealing their guilt by being too much like, "Oh, it's not me," you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure it's context. But anyway, so like, doth protest is just like now this like super archaic phrase, you know, like I disagree. I doth protest
too much. I'm gonna use that at some point this weekend at the summit.
I'm excited. I'll tweet about it when you do.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so tough one. I looked up a little bit of his background, and it's kind of interesting because he, you know, Tough Borland, when you kind of watch him play and you look at his size and you look at his style, you think, okay, well, I wonder what kind of background this kid comes from. You know exactly what kind of background this kid comes from. I think his
details, brother.
So he, all right, here's the paragraph. Kyle, who is his dad, played football at Wisconsin, then briefly in the NFL. Kyle's brother Brian is also the defensive coordinator and safeties coach at the University of Buffalo. Their father was a high school coach at Wisconsin, then a collegiate coach at a D3 school. Their grandfather was a high school football coach in Iowa. And Tuff's younger brother, Trevor, good name, is a junior defensive end and tight end at Bolingbrook High School. And so, like, whole family... just about football for generations. That's what Tough Borland comes from. He's actually had some really interesting training, which has to do with like black belt taekwondo and hand-eye coordination and improving the reaction of his
way that kid uses his hands. I'm not surprised.
It's really interesting, the training that he's been doing for years and years about hand-eye coordination, how he sees hands coming at them, how quickly he can move, and also really heightening peripheral vision. You know, when things are, you know, when you're a linebacker and you're dropping in his zone coverage and you see things out of the corner of your eye, being able to decipher them and react to them really well, it's from a lot of this unique training that he's gotten throughout the years. And so when you watch him and you see a lot of polish in those areas, a lot of really good reactions and instincts, they come from years of him training in a very unique way. And so what's the piece here? It is on cleveland.com. It's by Bill Landis. It's called Building Tough Borland. And so I think that if you want to learn more about Tough Borland, linebacker from Ohio State, you should learn about his background. Ben, but let's get into actually his tape. What'd you think of him?
Yeah, so Borland, good 2017, redshirt freshman, redshirt sophomore, not as productive, not as effective, and namely, just not on the field as much. And this is the big thing with Borland, is that the Ohio State Buckeyes bend over backwards to get this kid off the field on third down. And that's, like, coaches make dumb decisions. Alvin Kamara did not get touches. Like, we all know the cautionary tale of being like, oh, well, coaches say X, so X must be true.
Mm-hmm.
No. But they, like, Borland in coverage is just, it's not good. Borland is a, I remember Josie Jewell, Iowa, a couple years ago?
Yeah, I do.
Like, Josie Jewell was just so good if you just never asked him to run anywhere but forward at a slight angle. And that's where Borland is, right? Like, when Borland's playing downhill, flowing tackle to tackle, and it's, like, not dissimilar to Kenneth Murray I was talking about, but Borland especially, flowing downhill between the tackles, reading climbing linemen, reading pulling linemen, reading backfield action, filling gaps, switching gaps, making defenders in front of him correct, tremendous. And then I brought this up in terms of hand usage. I mean, Borland's got cinder blocks, dude. I mean, when he hits you.
I was really surprised at how well he was in control of offensive linemen that came at him, I thought. Right. Like, he could get off a block pretty easy, or at least easier than I thought he was going to do for a guy his size.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is he's 6'1", 235 at least, if not heavier. Like, he's a weight room junkie, you can tell. And his brother Chris was.
I don't think that he's bigger than 235.
Oh, I think he's 235 nearing 240. But
I don't know about that.
But right, a low guy with great hip bend, great knee bend, right? And so really athletic mover in terms of his frame, and this is a mixed martial arts thing, he's always ready to pop. Right, like, he's never coming into contact upright. He's never coming into contact without that loaded base, that loaded triangle, that 10 integrity through the core, through the glutes, through the quads, that says, I'm ready to pop you. I'm ready to explode contact right into you. And then, yeah, he activates the hands really well. And so power up through the core, you know, up from the ground into the hands, displace. And that's tremendous. Now, I think he gets overexcited, a little too much of, like, shuck this and step here and do that and everything. Sometimes it's like, you know, it's like play hunting, something I've talked about before in terms of it's not a problem. It's something you just kind of want to keep an edge off of.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that is great. He doesn't have a huge tackle radius, and so sometimes he can look great up until the tackle, and then, you know, if there's just too much space, if just the defensive tackle got washed a little too far, Borland can't really close that gap. He's a little bit stubby, doesn't have the longest arms, and then, I mean, his first step is molasses. Oh, man, like, he just – it takes him so long to get up on the bus. And you see, like, dude, it's I mean, like, again, like, he's not on the field for third down because he cannot tag people in man coverage. Right. And so if people get him on man coverage on early downs, and you'll see, like, oh, man, Wisconsin, Jonathan Taylor, track star, right? I'm not disputing that. Like, this is a fast player, but Borland just looks like he's playing a different game. I mean, it's not pretty at all. Who else? I watched him. TCU game last year. TCU is just all athletes, right? It's just like, Borland just looks like it's the first game. And so athletic in terms of your explosive.
All right, I
think
your internet's super terrible right now, so I'm going to let your connection hopefully get a little bit better, and I'm going to kind of echo some of the things that you were saying about Borland. But there are things that he does well. When you watch him, some of the fundamental parts of playing linebacker, a lot of the downhill things, we've been talking about that a lot this week. They definitely exist with him. Like, he can see the ball well. He can flood to the ball pretty well. He understands where it's going. He understands, I think, run fits pretty well. He got fooled by play action a little bit more than I thought he would. But like you said, too, yeah, I thought his hands were great. Got off blocks a lot easier than I thought. I thought when he could wrap you up, he's a good tackler. But all of those are kind of the lowest value things that I would want out of my linebacker. Right. And the higher value things, like being able to get on the hoof and beat a ball carrier to the sideline, or keeping up with somebody in man coverage, or having the length to be effective in zone, whatever it is, those are all the areas that you really need to be better at if you're going to be valued in the NFL. And so I think the Tough Moreland's obviously going to be a draftable player because of the things that he does well, and I think coaches are really going to like him. But in terms of the upside for him, he just doesn't check a lot of those upside boxes. So that's it. Tough Moreland's, full pun intended, it is a tough sell for me to think that he is going to be better than even a handful of the linebackers that we watched so far this week, even though I don't think the linebacker class is that great. Last guy.
All right, sell me. This is all you, man. Nate Landman.
So you really, linebacker, you really, did Colorado. You? It, all right, tell me right off the bat, out of the guys that we watched today, where would he rank in the four that we watched that we've just talked about for you?
It's him and Murray are my top two.
Okay, thank you. At least I have that going for me. All right, so Colorado linebacker, Nate Landman, 6'3", 235. I think he's built perfect for the position. All right, had a ton of production last year in his first full-time year as a starter. This year he talked about having much more of a leadership role. The seniors who were around him graduated, so it's truly his show in the middle. We're going to learn a lot about how well he knows the defense, because he's got a new defense coordinator as well this year, and he talked about how the terminology is a little bit more complex than it was in previous.
The Georgia dude, right?
Who is it?
I think it's a new head coach. I think it's the ex-Georgia guy. I can't remember.
It is. Mel Tucker is their new head coach, and defensive coordinator Tyson Summers. So
okay.
They're installing kind of a new defense, and Landman was saying that there's a decent amount of different terminology there, and he said it's the defense this year is more of a mind game. It's more of you're winning mentally than you are necessarily physically. And honestly, man, physically, I thought is what Landman did really well last year. You talked
I think that's bad news for Landman.
Well, here's the thing. You said what Kenneth Murray does well, you think that he does the best out of the other guys in this class. I totally disagree with you. When Nate Landman is on, when that first step fires off, when he can shoot a gap, when he can see something, when he can be patient, see something, go hit the ball carrier, whether it's at the sideline or in the backfield, this kid's got the ability to do it. And he did it a lot. And I feel like his highs with his frame worked so well as what I see as a potential linebacker. And I think there are times in coverage where, certainly as a first year, as a starter last year, he wasn't the guy calling the defense out. That was, who was that? Who was the veteran linebacker from Colorado last year?
Rick Gamboa,
yes. So it was like Gamboa's job basically to do a lot of that, and they also had Drew Lewis as well. So Nate Landman didn't have to do a lot of thinking last year. So he didn't progress a ton in that area because you could see it a little bit when he's back in coverage. But when that ball gets snapped and you watch, I think the patience from him when plays are developing, he's not over pursuing. He's not just flying at something because, oh, I'm a linebacker. I got to fly into an offensive lineman. This is my gap. I got to run straight at. I see so many linebackers who just go, okay, snap and go. And Landman is patient, really patient for a guy who was a sophomore linebacker, I thought. Ball would be snapped. He'd sift through the offensive line, wait to see which hole the running back chose, knew how to take a first step that was really good, get into the lane, make the tackle. I thought this guy was strong, long. He had a really great first step. He knew how to make tackles in the backfield. And more than almost anybody that we have watched this week, I thought Landman showed the potential. Not saying he's perfect. There's obviously some development there that still needs to come from him. But he has the potential, both in a mentality standpoint and a talent, physicality, athletic standpoint, to be a difference maker in the areas that you would want him to be. And if I'm drafting a linebacker, especially one early, they have to be able to make a difference, whether it's in coverage or in the backfield. And I don't think that I watched a linebacker. I'm not sure yet because I don't have my finals, my final rankings. We're going to get to that tomorrow, or we're going to get to that on Friday. But I don't think I saw a linebacker in this class that I thought had the potential to be a difference maker in those two areas like I did for Lamon.
Okay. Codswallow. I disagree. Okay, so
first, shocked. Because I already knew that was going to be the case when the podcast started. But this is good. This is our most disagreed upon podcast.
Right, it's good. So a couple of fun notes about Landman before we move on, because I like to give fun bio notes. Originally born in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Oh, yeah, I did know that. And his dad was a pro rugby player.
Yeah, exactly, which explains why his nickname, second fun fact, why Landman plays in such a style that his nickname is the Hammer. He is called the Hammer by his teammates, which it's good news. Suck up, going to be honest. That's I rock with that, and he plays like a hammer. I'm so curious in the fact that you thought he was a patient. I thought he was slow to process.
You and I saw that very differently then.
Yeah, so I thought he was slow to process, and then at times I thought that he was very, very guilty of getting tunnel vision, in the sense that once he thought he saw it, he dialed in and saw red. I think there's a lot of examples for me on Landman's film of he goes to block deconstruct, does so successfully while the running back is running by. You know what I mean? And so you start missing the forest for the trees a little bit when you're so oriented on what's directly in front of you that you always want to remember as a linebacker, the vernacular is play through the line to the back, not playing at the line. You know what I mean? And so I thought there were times when he would get tunnel vision, he would, you know, kind of see red, get red in that way. And then my final big thing, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this. You didn't really touch on it too much. He's not fast. He's not explosive. Like you said, he has a good first step, which I think he has like a smart first step coming down to the line, like reading flow and everything. But pursuing to the boundary, he's not fast. He's slow, slow.
Weird.
Dude, I don't like, you watch Washington?
I did not watch the Washington game, no.
Washington's got a back named Salman Ahmed, who's like a 4-4 kid. And Landman had multiple reps where I was like, all right, this is a race to the sideline. And he gave up a touchdown because he couldn't beat Ahmed to the corner. Huh. I mean, he just does not – I think he carries a lot of mass and he carries it well, but you're just not going to be super fast. So to me, like he's a between-the-tackles influence guy with some positive traits and some negative traits. And, like, you know, in this linebacker class, I'm nowhere near writing off Nate Landman. Like, I think he's got, very interesting stuff in terms of physicality, block deconstruction. He's very strong. I think tackle radius-wise, he can be a little hit and miss, but he does make some really nice at-length tackles, diving tackles, moving at velocity tackles, which is impressive. He's got some good traits. Like, I do not dislike Landman at all. But to me, like, I did not see a quick processor, and I did not see a plus athlete.
Well, I saw patience more than slow processing. I guess I took it the other way, and then I got to watch that Washington game. I guess that's what I got to do before I come up with my final rankings. I'll come back to you after I watch that Washington one. So, all right, well, there was. Ben and I disagreed.
Man. Yeah, and we're never going to do a podcast together again because it got so explosive.
Wow, mom and dad are fighting.
Oh, no.
No, it was good. Tomorrow, Fan Friday. I got to watch that Washington game before we get to Fan Friday because we're also doing our top five linebackers. And then Ben and I are recording Fan Friday early, so we're getting it up. Hopefully you guys got your questions in. We warned you last podcast. I think we already got a decent amount, so hopefully you guys did that.
Yeah, we'll be heated on Thursday morning.
If you're listening to this between the hours of midnight and like 10 a.m., there's still time for you.
Like a real fan would.
To get it in. You can still get your questions in, but we're recording it early on Thursday. So make sure you guys get your questions in before then if you want to get on this episode. If not, listen, there's always another Friday. You guys can get in. But we want you to be as involved in the show as you can because that's when we have the most fun. So until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.